Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. This week I'm joined by Henry Burrell, our consumer tech editor at Tech Advisor.
Hello.
And Tamlyn McGee, a reporter at techworld.com.
It's just too much of a mouthful, isn't
it? It is. Well, I tried to make it simple by just saying reporter and it backfired aggressively on me.
That's fine.
This week we're going to be talking about the new Pixel phones. That's why Henry's here, and we're going to be talking about the London Film Festival because Tamlyn's been diving into that. But first we're going to start off with some news. I wanted to talk quickly about the Google Plus hack. Because I think it needs a little bit of unpacking for people, and B, because it's hilarious to talk about Google Plus in the year of our Lord 2018.
I don't think I have a Google Plus profile.
I think everyone has. I think you have to have one. If you're a Google, if you have a Google account, you by proxy have a Google Plus account.
Right, okay. I mean, I vaguely remember looking into it when it was launched. I don't even remember what year that was.
You probably have like a grey avatar and no information on
Google
there.
Egg.
Same as the executives at Google as well.
Pretty much.
They've not been using it for years.
No.
So that's like the first point is that people have been talking about the downfall of Google Plus since like 2013,
was
I think,
it launched
really.
Now?
Pretty much, yeah, from the day it launched. But for anyone that isn't aware of its existence, which I can't blame you for, it's basically Google's social media platform.
Yeah.
And it was it went through lots of iterations, but originally you were kind of in circles, and then you would share things in your circles.
Yeah, like a weird kind of like exclusive Venn diagram of interests.
It never worked. It never ever worked.
It was weird.
The reason it's back in the news is because Google has had to completely shut it down. They've basically wiped it off the face of the planet because there was a data breach back in 2015 that they never reported.
Okay. So, but was it actually like a breach in like a hack, or was it more just like it could have been viewed?
Actually is probably the wrong word. So the way to think about what happened is it's actually very similar to what happened at Facebook with the Cambridge Analytica scandal.
Right.
There was a developer API for Google Plus which allowed people to access information that you hadn't like specifically made public in the way that people were doing with Facebook apps. So you'd do a quiz, obviously, and then through that, because the permissions were so loose, you'd be able to then access like whole pools of information.
So this is more like that in a small window, third party devs could have conceivably looked at your personal details.
So had Google Plus been popular, it could have resulted in a scandal similar to Cambridge.
Which is why it's so funny. They just go, they've literally gone like, it's probably fine because you weren't using it. So
yeah. So apparently they discovered it, patched it. They found that 438 apps were accessing third-party information, potentially ethically, problematically. That's a very, very small number. Mm. And only 500,000 people's information was kind of shared inappropriately.
And supposedly they like, it's like, I think the API is on like a two-week upgrade cycle.
Yeah.
So the window is small.
Yeah, so the hack itself is not really a big deal. The big deal with this story is that an internal memo was made public by the Wall Street Journal, in which the CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, it went all the way to the top, basically, and they decided not to report this breach because, in his exact words, they feared Cambridge Analytica-style repercussions for the company.
Right. I think that's the wrong decision.
Which is problematic because you're... And for context as well, Google, more than most, has been very, very keen to keep itself out of these sort of enveloping privacy scandals. So Larry Page didn't... He was the only one of the big kind of tech executives not to turn up to the Congress hearings.
Yeah, he didn't turn up, did he?
Yeah, there was an empty seat. And that plays into bigger problems with Larry Page's kind of distant leadership of Alphabet at the moment.
Yeah.
But that's for another day. So yeah, they clearly really did not want this to come to light. And now that it has, it's embarrassing for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it is just closed down. I kind of expected that to happen at some point anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this was clearly the...
Because it's not Google does, is it? Like, no. Facebook and whatever, I was going to say Instagram, but that is Facebook now, isn't it?
Yeah.
it's more like they are services and they try to, like, you know, make your life better by, like, giving you stuff and services and try and, like, make you invest in that platform.
Yeah.
Whereas Google, I always feel, we can talk about this a bit with the phones as well, but, like, it's just kind of a service that you use, and Google is always there, but it doesn't ever try to make you buy into a product unless it's physical hardware.
No, so I think the kind of the backstory of Google Plus is that when they created Google Plus, it was very much at the peak of the social media boom, and they felt like if they didn't have their own offering, they were going to fall behind. And I think their main concern was that they would completely miss out on that mobile advertising market, which Facebook now dominates because it's such a big social media player. That didn't play out, but that I understand the logic.
Yeah, totally.
They probably didn't execute as well as they could have.
Could the memo itself be indicative of, I guess it is indicative of wider problems at Google, which is kind of concerning when you think about how many Android phones there are on the planet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always been news stories about, you know, unsecure or unvetted apps or clone apps on the Android platform, but I wonder if there's a parallel there with, you know, how they kept this problem to themselves. Like, that there might be other things, or there probably are other things that we have no idea about.
Yeah,
and I wasn't aware, but apparently there's a unit within Alphabet whose entire job is to basically point the finger at, like, breaches and holes with third-party developers. I can't remember what it's called. It's called, like, the Open Something Project. So there's some irony there that they have a unit which does this kind of thing. But then when they do it themselves, they're not as forthcoming with the breach. And it takes 3 years and a Wall Street Journal investigation to make it come to light.
Does it make you feel that, like you were sort of suggesting, that they might have hidden things like this before? And why would they hide things like that? Because, I mean, we laugh about Google Plus, and it's kind of, it really was the final nail.
Yeah.
But, like, if the same thing happened with, like, you know, Gmail,
mm-hmm.
or, like, conceivably Google Pay information or whatever.
Absolutely.
Then, like, I don't know, do you think that they were just so unaware of, like, Google Plus just because no one was using it that they kind of let it slip? Or?
Possibly. I mean, it's impossible to speculate, but, like, it definitely has a window into their corporate culture here in the fact that they are very risk averse, and they very much don't want things like this seeing the light of day, whereas I personally would rather a company of that size and power be a little bit more transparent.
Yeah, I agree.
What was the other thing I was going to say? The other thing I was going to say is that this also plays into another issue that Google is having recently, where they're actually, they've been subject to a couple of pretty high profile internal leaks recently.
Yeah.
So obviously this memo coming out is embarrassing to them, and that has to have come, I assume, from internal sources. And also Breitbart published a hour and a half long video a couple of months ago of the first they always at Google, they have an all hands every week, and it's like top execs talking about what's been going on.
Yeah.
But they released the video of the one the day after the Trump election, and it was a lot of sort of liberal hand wringing, and the Conservatives obviously lapped it up.
I missed that actually.
But, like, yeah, it's quite interesting. I watched most of it, and it's mostly Sergey Brin just talking about talking about how sad and devastated everyone is.
Yeah, which, that's not great to show.
It's just, I mean, it was a kind of something that they stream to all their employees, so it's very easy to leak. But there do seem to be some leak issues at Google at the moment, and these embarrassments, as Facebook have shown, tend to kind of accumulate pretty quickly.
I guess Google's sort of enemy number one in the sort of alt-right circles because of the very public firing of the person who sent around that ridiculous memo. That was Google,
what was he called?
Wasn't it?
James?
I can't remember.
Don't know.
I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah. But sexist James.
Yeah.
Just complaining about
with his stupid
the
face.
Fact that he can't get away with sexism at work and stuff. And
I think,
that,
I think
that really angered all the sexists and misogynists for some reason. Who knows?
I think the alt-right also the alt-right also hate Google because they believe that it, like, pushes down their content and stuff.
Well, same with Facebook, right?
Yeah.
People complain that it sort of pushes conservative stuff down or up, depending on who's hacked it that month.
Yeah.
But is that because these companies shouldn't be like the BBC, they shouldn't have a political bias? Or are we going to come to the point where large corporations like this can have a public stance to that?
Well, I've always said with Twitter that there's no reason why Twitter can't decide what the hell goes on its platform. At the end of the day, it doesn't have to be a neutral platform, yeah. And it definitely isn't. So,
no.
I think that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you are getting people like the Atlantic Council advising Facebook what's acceptable on their site, like, you know, no tears shed over Alex Jones being banned from any platform, but groups like the Atlantic Council are very much pushing an Atlanticist pro-NATO kind of thing, you know, removing like pro-Venezuelan pages and things like that. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm ranting, but you know.
Now we've talked about it quite a lot.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'll wrap up. But yeah, I just thought it'd be to dive in, and also RIP Google Plus.
Yeah, what circle would you have been in? What circles? Is it circles of people? What was it?
Yeah, was it interests?
None of us.
No.
No
one knows. Google didn't know.
We probably should have checked. Go and delete your account.
RIP. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk about Google a little bit more.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Henry, Google.
Yeah.
They still make phones, though.
Yeah, they love a phone. I love a phone.
Yeah, you do.
You guys pretend you don't love a phone, but I know you do.
Looking at mine right now.
What phone? Pay attention. What phone have they brought out?
Well, Pixel 3.
Yeah.
And the Pixel 3 XL. So, yeah, as you would assume, the third time they've done a Pixel. This was no secret. I think in recent memory, this was the most leaked phone.
More Google leaks.
Yeah, big old leak. It does happen to Apple, but usually in the past couple of years,
the last iPhone was pretty badly leaked, wasn't it?
Yeah, the XS leaked, but that was sort of just because the guy at 9to5Mac is really good at like guessing URLs and finding like official images, whereas like this is actually just like 2 months ago or so, like they were just on the Russian black market.
Yeah.
Someone just nicked them off a van or something.
Brilliant.
Or just like someone in the supply chain is easily bribed. And even then, like 3 days before the launch, guys over at Engadget found one in a shop in Hong Kong, did a whole hands-on because someone was just selling it. Yeah, it's been ridiculous. And then there was this whole ridiculous conspiracy theory that usually our friends in the tech YouTube world attach themselves to. Fair enough. They got more traffic than we did. But they were suggesting that this Google Pixel 3 XL, which is, I don't know if you've seen the pictures, has a very large notch.
Absolute unit.
Yeah, absolute unit. Yeah, it's like a dog's nose at the top. Like, it's so it's huge, like comically so. And people were saying, oh, I think Google have leaked like a fake product. And then they're going to like be surprised,
good,
bitches. And then like, I mean, obviously that is not true.
No.
And Google had to, they had quite an interesting event. We were not at the one in New York, we were at the one in London. So they'd like live stream it for UK press and hands-on time with the phones. It was a weird one. They were very much about what is Google for. We are like, and they didn't actually mention the Google Plus thing.
Yeah,
we thought they may do, but they didn't. but they kind of addressed it indirectly. So yeah. Rick Osterloh, he's the devices guy. Sundar didn't actually do anything this year, which is slightly odd. He came out and kind of, they'd the Beatles Help, well, a cover of it was playing, and it's all about how Google helps you and like it wants to like be in your life and like help you out and like make your life better and everything.
So theirs is very much a software play.
Yeah, so they go in with the software thing, and then they went, and here are all the new devices, and then they all like did you see they came out
the floor.
This didn't happen in London, but in New York they came out of columns. They appeared in the, and then he was like, right, no, everyone sit down again, and then they all like went back. That was really weird.
So what was it, phones, and then there's
two
the home
new phones,
device.
Home Hub, which is a bit like an Echo Show, so like a smart display that you plug in.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a camera on it, which is great, because in the same week that Facebook brought out their Portal device, which everyone was like, why would I put a Facebook hardware with a camera in my house? It was quite clever of Google to not put a camera on it. It's just like I'd say affordable, at 140 quid, little display that you can just sort of, you know, have in the kitchen, hands-free, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I personally wouldn't really use one. We'll get it in for review and see. It's kind of like one of these categories of device that we don't really know who is buying them and why people are buying them.
But I have a Google Home and I like it very much.
Yeah. But like, that's the audio thing, I suppose. Would you want it to have a screen?
I can see like extremely limited uses for it, like maybe like recipe videos. Or...
Yeah, that's the one they always go to. Yeah. It's like you can say, hey, how do I need dough? And that's what, and
but also,
yeah.
I've got my phone for that.
And then a lot of people just say, yeah, well, you got Google Assistant.
Could you have it like as a rotating picture frame?
Yes, right, you can. It's got this deep integration with Google Photos, and it can like calibrate the screen so that in certain lights it looks like more natural photos, and you can like have stuff like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, if you're a techie person, you're going to have really it knocking about, aren't you, for a
calendars and such.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. So there's that. That was pretty cool. It's quite small. Then there's the Google Pixel Slate, which is a, I suppose, like an iPad Pro kind of competitor. Mm-hmm. It's far too expensive. I think it's $550 for just the tablet that doesn't come with the £190 keyboard, and that's the underpowered one as well. Like if you want like an i7 of these things, like it's going to cost you like nearly $2,000. But it's a Chromebook. Well, it's not a Chromebook. It's a Chrome Tab.
It's a bit like Surface then.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But I only run Chrome, so fine. Yeah, it's like a big Android thing. But the phones are interesting. Bear with me.
So the phones.
So it has a notch, basically, because like all notch phones, it wants to give you a taller screen with more usable space, but then also, not have a big bezel at the top. But weirdly, the small one has the exact same cameras and tech in it. It just doesn't have a notch, just smaller. So a lot of people are just going to want to go for the small one, probably, unless you want that big old notch at the top.
The notch is a dog's nose type feature.
Yeah, it is, yeah. So, I mean, iPhone X has a notch, but it's like quite long and short, whereas this is like more squat. It's like a square almost at the top, and people just sort of have taken umbrage with it. But I mean, it's got two selfie cameras in it, so you can do wide angle selfies. It's got a big speaker in it, so you've got dual speakers on the front, and when you use a phone with a notch, you kind of just forget it's there anyway. It's not too big a deal. The phones are really expensive though. It's £150 more than last year, $150 more as well.
How much is it?
$739 for the small one.
Okay, so about the same as the 10R.
Yeah, and that's the problem I think they're going to have. Like, they've got operator partnerships with everyone this year. It was only EE last year.
Okay.
So they're going to be in more stores, and you're going to see more stuff around. But yeah, you bring up a good point. If you're on the fence about what phone to get, and you see this iPhone XR for the same price as a Pixel, I think most normal people are going to get an iPhone, I think.
Do some people like love the Google phones? Does it have a fan base?
It is still very techie.
Yeah.
It's funny because, yeah, obviously Google makes Android. I think most people probably don't really think about that. A lot of people, like I know, just think that Samsung is Android, which is fair. Like, you don't have to obviously take an interest in these phones. But with the Pixel, it's more like an enthusiast device at the moment. And I don't really know who buys them, and they don't sell a lot of them.
No.
Which is kind of makes sense why the event was all about, you know, how the services help you. And, this is if you just want the hardware and the way Google wants to present it to you.
I was going to say, like, Google's got so much money, can it afford to just create, like, nice, interesting devices and say, look what we're capable of doing without actually having to worry about
something? It's almost a lost game, isn't it?
Yeah. But in the tech press, they do get good reviews, and the camera is, like, ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's still only got one rear-facing camera. We'll have a review soon. But it's doing some really clever stuff. But it's the stuff that I nerd out on and enjoy. But, you know, I'd be interested to know if you care about the sort of things it does. But basically, Most high-end phones have two cameras now, usually for depth perception or zooming, whereas Google does both of these with just
the 10R doesn't, does it?
It doesn't, no. It's learning a digital zoom. But like, so the Pixel will just take, when you open the camera, it's basically like constantly collecting image data. Like it's actually kind of taking a photo and storing it in memory for a few seconds.
Yeah.
And then when you press the shutter, it takes like, I think it's 5 or 6, closest to when you press the shutter, and then computationally after the fact merges them together.
Gotcha.
And then like uses the information from the pixels. So like also if you can zoom in, it's got this new super zoom feature. So you zoom and it knows your hand is shaking and it can like compensate for the shake. So like when you digitally zoom, you don't get that grain where it's like trying to work out what's going on.
I have seen some
the delirium tremens.
Yeah. the morning shakes, yeah.
I have seen some tweeted like comparisons and the camera is very good. It's very impressive.
I mean the Pixel 2, in my opinion, is still like, until I review this new one, the best.
Is that when you went and did some low light stuff?
Yeah, the low light's mad, and it's got this, and the new one is cool as well because they're going to back this software update. See, here's the advantage of buying into services is that you will get some of the new camera features on older hardware, but it's got this thing they call night sight. They came up with lots of funny puns for what it's called. And again, it's, other cameras like Huawei's phone, it uses just like a shitload of pixels and image data to like collect more light. And the Pixel will do it all computationally. And it kind of artificially adds light to photos, but some people don't care about that. They just want to have an iPhone. And
Would it be a good shout if you're on more of a limited budget to maybe pick up a original Pixel now if you can find one, or just wait until they're a bit cheaper and then?
Yeah, totally. Like the Pixel 2 has gone down in price now. You can get the small Pixel 2 for like under £450, which is a good deal. And you're going to get most of what the new one has without that notch in a software update. So.
Nice.
Good phones.
Anything else about the phone apart from the camera?
It's the last phone. The Pixel 2 was still aluminium. So if you dropped it, it's not going to necessarily smash the back. It's glass now.
Okay.
So that's partly why it's more expensive. And every flagship phone is glass now. So
yeah.
Goodbye to metal phones.
And no more small phones.
The Pixel 3 is smaller. Okay. It's 5.5-inch screen, which is apparently considered the small size now, but it's quite squat.
And the XL's?
XL's like 6.3, I think. Yeah. So it's big.
Sport a chunky battery life on it as well?
The battery life is meant to be pretty good. The bigger one, obviously, the advantage you get is bigger screen, bigger battery, but otherwise it's the same phone. Mm. Yeah.
Cool. It's enough phones.
Yeah, sorry.
For one day.
Onward.
We're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back to talk to Tamlin about films. Tamlin, it is London Film Week. London Film Month?
Film Festival.
Film Festival, which runs for more than a week. You've been talking to some directors. You've been diving into the programme. What has sort of stood out on the programme this year for you?
Well, there's a small handful of films that make like technology really central to their plot and narrative. And there's one film that plays out, a thriller that plays out entirely on a guy's computer screen about a journalist infiltrating ISIS, which is a really interesting concept, although not the first time he's done it. But what I want to talk about was a really interesting looking documentary that I've seen, but promise not to spoil or review until after the premiere, which is on Sunday.
Okay.
But I can talk about the premise of it.
Nice.
And it's called The Plan. It's by a director called Steve Sprung. And it's about how workers at a factory, an aerospace factory called Lucas Aerospace in the 70s, were threatened with redundancy. And they came up with an alternative plan so that instead of manufacturing, you know, weapons and things to kill people, they created a comprehensive document full of feasible devices that would be socially useful, was their term.
Okay.
And a lot of it was really, really progressive. Like, you can, for example, they were talking about something called thermal pollution at that time, which now we understand to be like greenhouse gases. And in the mid-70s, that was really a progressive thing to be talking about. Also, like hybrid engines, fuel agnostic generators for the developing world, all this sort of stuff. So it's just a really interesting concept, and it's a part of British and like working class history that I was not aware of at all until I had the press release in my inbox saying we're making this film.
So this is a documentary?
Yes, it's a documentary.
That's part of history that I was not aware of. You've seen the film. How does it look? How does it play out?
Well, I've promised not to talk about the film itself, so that's slightly annoying of me, but not my fault. But I think the premise of the film is extremely relevant to today because it brings up all these questions about not only what is work and who is it for, but also what is technology, who is it for, who does it serve, and what could be possible compared to what we are doing. So of course, right. they were talking about like de-weaponizing. Let's like, instead of making fighter jets or missiles, let's make generators.
Yeah.
You know, not a big leap from manufacturing from airplanes to be able to do that. But now, you know, the question's even more pertinent, I think, because, you know, we've got like 10, 20 years to sort out climate change or we're all going to go extinct.
12, isn't it?
12. Thank you, Scott. And I guess, you know, the questions of AI, artificial intelligence, and what all these big Silicon Valley companies are doing behind closed doors without any sort of citizen or democratic input. I always wonder personally, like, I wonder what could be achieved if we weren't putting all this technology into, I don't know, surveillance or
yeah.
or for private profit or for advertising or marketing.
It's funny, it really reflects like what is becoming a bit of a theme in the Valley at the moment, where employees of these companies are starting to band together and basically ask questions of the priorities of the companies they work for. So they're starting to ask Microsoft, there's quite vocal groups now talking about why they're doing why they're providing technology for the border control, things happening at Salesforce, and same thing's been happening at Google,
Amazon as well.
Yeah,
Google Project Maven, the drone program for the Department of Defense in America as well.
Yeah,
the workers there got that put on ice. Pardon the pun.
So there's that interesting tension between management and employees in terms of what, like, a lot of people I think who moved to the Valley, especially when they moved to the Valley in the 70s when it really was in its infancy. They moved there, I think, because they thought they could sort of use technology to make the world a better place. And that never really kind of played out. All it's done is build a massive advertising sort of industry.
For sure, for sure. And if you talk to it, you know, even when I'm doing like enterprise B2B conferences or whatever, you talk to these engineers, and a lot of them are big sci-fi fans. And not only sci-fi, but they love like the utopian kind of sci-fi of Star Trek more than the dystopian stuff. And
well, that's why they love open source. That's why the open source community exists, is because these guys love to collaborate and work with each other.
So, yeah, I think to an extent, maybe some of the engineers have been victims in this, because they're, you know, sold the idea of Google. I wasn't talking about Google again, but, you know, don't be evil, which they dropped recently.
They did drop that, didn't they?
Be evil now, it's okay. but yeah, like, it's definitely not gone in that direction, has it?
No, they were sold a dream, and it never kind of played out.
It does come to the surface, though. It bubbled a little bit at the Pixel event.
Oh, really?
Like the people they have on stage, they're like, they are like, yeah, they're nerds. And
yeah.
They are just like, we can't believe we created this thing that can like screen your calls for you and like ring up a restaurant and make you a booking. And they're just like, it's really exciting.
Yeah, the duplex thing.
Yeah, the duplex, yeah. But then they try and put out hardware to reach an audience. But really, like, yeah, they can't really control what their company is involved in other areas.
So was that kind of what happened at Lucas? Was this group of employees basically kind of took over the shop?
No, sadly not. It's completely the other direction. And again, I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to spoil the film, but most of this is like public knowledge. You can Google it. So they came up with this really comprehensive plan, the trade unionists at the Lucas Aerospace, and they had the support of Tony Benn. And it didn't happen.
Okay.
Management refused to talk to them ever again.
Yeah.
So, you know, quite sad, but still really interesting that there was such a sort of progressive movement towards creating good things with technology back in the 70s. I mean, you hear like the Financial Times or the Telegraph say, oh, you know, Corbyn and McDonald, they want to take us back to the 70s. But hang on, there were workers in the 70s who are like, well, let's save the world before it's too late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
maybe we could look back a little bit at some of the progressive stuff that was just sort of swept under the rug.
It sounds really good. And you kind of dived into the program a little bit. You wrote kind of a roundup of some of the techie titles that are going to be screened at the festival. Is technology purposefully a theme this year, or is it more a coincidence that that's just what a lot of people are making movies about right now?
I wouldn't even say there's that many films that... I mean, I
but
did
they just
round-
caught your attention.
Yeah, I did a roundup and it's got like six things in it.
Okay.
And I did look through the program. These were the most interesting things I could find. But these ones made technology very central, either to the production or to the narrative. Like, there's something that was described, a film called Cam, as a thrillingly sex-positive techno horror about a cam girl. And there's...
I've seen a poster for that.
Yeah, you have.
Yeah.
I haven't at all, but I'm on a different planet when I'm commuting, so it doesn't surprise me. There's the plan, obviously. There's another one called Make Me Up, which is about, it's like taking these YouTube beauty videos to their like extreme dystopian conclusion, like a feminist techno thriller as well. So there's a bunch of stuff that looks really interesting. There's one called The Guilty, which I saw a press screener for, but I'm not sure if it's been premiered yet, so I probably can't talk about that either. But it's set in a call center, and it's despite that, it's good.
Okay. And that film that you mentioned up front as well, that kind of all plays out on the guy's desktop.
Oh, Profile, yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me, because there was a film that actually hit the cinemas earlier this year called Searching, which is similar concept, where a guy, it's John Cho, who is one of the bro-y bros in American Pie, but this is a more serious role. And his daughter goes missing, and then it basically all plays out on him, like, searching through Google and social media to try and track her down.
Right.
And apparently it's obviously a really interesting concept, but apparently it's quite well done as well.
I've not seen that, but it's the same guy, Timur Bekmambetov. Apologies if I've completely massacred his name. But he's developed software called ScreenLife to make films in this sort of fashion.
Gotcha.
And, yeah, there's Searching, there's Profile, and there's another one called Unfriended Dark Web, and it all unfolds on computer screens. And he wants to be extremely prolific and make loads and loads and loads of them.
Yeah.
So he's sort of almost spurring on a movement with...
When is it going to change, though, that tech in films is not dystopian and not kind of like, you know, malicious and evil? Because like, even in like Hollywood films, when there's tech, I think it's normally portrayed as like bad.
Yeah.
So I genuinely think that more sort of like... tech positive and utopian sci-fi stories are probably going to come from China, because there's a big sci-fi fiction movement over there which doesn't focus on dystopian at all. It's all about what could be achieved.
Right.
And you could
argue that Interstellar is as close as we've got to that.
Yeah, I've not actually seen that.
It's not good.
Oh.
I mean, I think it's so... We talked about dystopia recently, didn't we? But it's so easy to... It's a lot easier to imagine it, because it's just like the world we're in, but slightly worse, with a bit more scary tech in it, you know.
Yeah, it's easy to make it malicious, isn't it, and scary.
I think like positive sci-fi is a much more interesting area, and I hope we see more of it.
That's interesting that it'll probably emerge from China, especially considering that a real-life dystopian situation just played out, and the fact that the most famous Chinese actress just got arrested and forced to put out an apology
and
for
also,
tax evasion.
Really? And yeah, and like it's sort of... Chinese tech can be demonized in the West as well, like when one of the Samsung execs got sent to jail, basically.
Yeah.
And also where like the US banning Huawei simply for the reason basically that it's Chinese.
Yeah, I mean, that's
in a very basic terms, but like
there is less always... transparency traditionally there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think China is a case in point, just like the West, where, you know, obviously tech is being used to dystopian means,
of course,
in Xinjiang province and the surveillance tech and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess, I don't know, my limited understanding of like Chinese censorship is they allow criticism, but they don't like mass movements, basically. That's where they step in. So you're encouraged to like criticize local government or whatever, or it's tolerated. So I could understand maybe why, like... I've lost my train of thought. It's probably nonsense anyway. But I the cultural context of films in China, like, what are they going to allow?
Yeah.
To be released?
Yeah.
Probably stuff that's like either riding the new coattails of this new Chinese nationalism, like the Wolf Warrior films, which are great but also ridiculous propaganda, or like positive stuff.
Nice.
I'm going on now, I'll stop.
It's all right.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I think we are done for the day. Thank you, everyone.
We'll try and do it more regs.
Yeah, go off and enjoy your weekend. Watch some films. Films are good.
And phones. Phones are good.
Phones and films.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.